We have a guest speaker, so you need to be energized and ready to go. If you got it, say, got it. That was so much better then. Please help me welcome Nate Spinney up here to speak with us tonight.
Am I on? I'm on. Great. What's up, everybody? For those of you that don't know me, looks like there's some new faces. My name is Nate Spinney. I'm a small group leader. I've been a small group leader here for a while now. I lead the men's group. Sits over there. So I'm just going to jump right in. Tonight, I'm talking about love, specifically 1 Corinthians chapter 13, which is a classic. You hear it in probably every wedding you've ever been to, but it means so much more than that. That's what we're going to talk about tonight. So first, fair warning, I'm going to tell you a story that you will not like. But it's probably my favorite story of all time that happened in my life. So I'm just going to dive in. So this, you're about to see a picture on the screen of one of my best friends in the whole world. So that's me, obviously, bending down. Speaking of weddings, that is my wedding day. But the guy right next to me in the middle, his name is Sean. Sean Murphy is one of my best friends. We met doing a service project. Instant bond. And we just were, thick as thieves from that moment when we first met. I was probably 19 years old. He was 18. We were slightly younger. But we ended up living in the same town. We did pretty much everything together. And there was this particular story that I want to share with you about Sean. Happened when we were going to, a birthday party. I don't remember exactly what the nature of the party was, but we had to go to the grocery store to get some items, because we had to bring something. It was like a potluck, and we were teenagers and didn't know any better. But before I continue, what you have to know about Sean, again, like I said, we were tight, but Sean is the kind of guy you hope everybody you know has a Sean in their life. He grew up in Montana, but then when he was 14, he and his family moved to Southern California, and he was the king of his high school. Everybody loved Sean. He was funny. He was charming. He was kind. He engaged you with eye contact and just really made you feel special. He did that to everybody, which was what was so great. And now Sean, like I said, was the captain of the wrestling team. He just had a million. Am I doing that or? We good now? Is that better? That better? Okay, so don't forget, Sean is awesome. We're going to keep talking about Sean. So I think I've made it clear. Sean, excellent. Salt of the earth kind of person. So we were at the grocery store about to go to this party. I was picking up potato chips. He was picking up 2 liters of soda. That's all we were getting, just a couple of items. And we were, it was like, somebody. I think it was somebody's senior graduation party. That's what it was. So it was summertime, midday. And in California, at this time, when I was a teenager, we did not have the self-checkouts like we have now, where you can just totally bypass all of humanity and go about your business. At this point, we had to go wait in the checkout line. And as we were walking to the checkout line, there were a couple of options, and there was one with 3 people in line, and one with 4 people in line, and one with 1 person in line. We're we made it to that. And of course, we get in that line, and there's the one person, but she's got 2 carts full of stuff. And it's this was a mistake. But we were committed. Somebody got behind us, and so we were trapped in there. And she was probably, if I had to guess, 50 years old in that range. And it was a little strange because we were excited. We were going to go to a party, whatever. But she kept looking at Sean, and it was getting uncomfortable because she, as her million zillion items were being checked in, she kept looking back and making eyes with Sean, and it was very strange. And I was, as outgoing as I am, I was a little shy in that moment, especially with strangers that are staring at my friends. So I started reading the soap opera digest. But again, Sean, best guy, engages, right? And sure enough, finally, before she's, before all her items are done, she sort of said, I know you're probably freaked out that I keep staring at you, but I just have to tell you. My son is is in the military, and he's deployed, and he's been in the Middle East for like 3 years. And right before he left, we had this huge falling out. I haven't spoken to him. He doesn't answer my letters. I don't know. And you just look exactly like him. And I'm like, don't know what to do. I wish I was somewhere else in that moment. I was so uncomfortable. But Sean was like just there, right? He was with this person who was just pouring her heart out. And she was she's like, you remind me of my son, and I'm just so devastated. I haven't heard from this person. And she's like, I know it's a weird request, but can I give you a hug? And I was like, I'm gonna go. And I couldn't stand it. But he did. And he gave her a hug, and it was this really moving experience in the grocery store. But then it took another weird step, where she was like, can you say, I love you, Mom? And I was like, all right. I wouldn't do that. But he did. And he's like, I love you, Mom. She's like, can you say it one more time louder? And he's like, yeah, I love you, Mom. That's great. And it was so touching. And then, you know, the checker grabbed his two bags of potato chips and checked them, and then she was like, so that'll be $484. And he's like, no, it's just the potato chips. And she's like, well, you're paying for your mom's, right? And as the wheels are turning in my head, as I realize what just happened, Sean is out. He's the captain of the wrestling team, too. He's running down the path. And the woman, I see her. She's, like, running to the door. And I'm like, I don't know what's going on. So I follow, and I'm running, too. And I get out there, and she's throwing her bags in the car. And Sean dives and grabs her leg and starts pulling it harder than I'm pulling your leg right now. So I swear there's a good reason why I told you that story, but I'm just going to leave you with that for the moment. I used to tell that story just as an aside. I love it, yes. I got one. I used to tell that story at camp, swear to you, and I was a little meaner. I would say the son died, right? I was like, I had kids crying. It was the best. It was a great story. All right, so anyway, why are we really here? We're talking about love. And I say, like I said, there's a point to that story. So 1st verse I'm going to read is Matthew 22, verse 37 to 40. The teacher said to Jesus, which is the greatest commandment in the law? Jesus replied, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all of your mind. We talked about that recently if you've been here. This is the first and greatest commandment. I'm going to say it again. It's so important. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. The second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments. Love God and love others. If you've heard me preach before, you've probably heard this verse before, because to me, the question was posed directly to Jesus. Which is the most important thing? And he says it. Love God and love others. So to me, it's the whole package. Everything in the scriptures is good and rich and wise, but this is the question. What's the most important? This is. According to Jesus, love is everything. I hope that the next, if you could just skip ahead to the one with the picture, it's the best. Yes. Love is everything. You may know her. That's Ariana Grande. I happened to Google Love is Everything today, and turns out, I didn't know this until today, she has a Christmas song called Love is Everything, which is really wonderful. I'll probably forget it tomorrow, but it makes my point. Everybody loves Ariana Grande. So love is everything. Everything flows from the act of loving God and loving others. You can't do anything else but through those things. So now I want to jump to 1 Corinthians. 1 Corinthians 13, verse 1. If I speak in the tongues of men or of angels, but do not have love, I am only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all the mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have faith that can move mountains, but I do not have love, I am nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor, and I give over my body to hardship that I may boast, but I do not have love, I gain nothing. And I skip ahead to verse 8. Love never fails. So I think we get it, that love is pretty important. In fact, it's critical. It is everything. So the next question, if we agree that love is everything, it's important, that's great. So what is love? And hopefully my next picture. Did anybody recognize that movie? So if we agree that love is important and it's the thing that everything hangs on, we have to ask the question, what is love? And 1 Corinthians defines it. And what's interesting about 1 Corinthians and its definitions is it doesn't look anything like what we see today in the United States, in the media, in what our little social circles tell us love is. It doesn't look anything like that. So I'm going to just jump in. You probably know it. You probably have it memorized. I think a lot of people stop after the first two because they're like, oh, I know that one. Love is patient, love is kind, you know, et cetera. But there's so much more in there. So love is patient, love is kind. It does not envy, it does not boast, it is not proud. It does not dishonor others, it is not self-seeking, it is not easily angered, it keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. When you look carefully at that list, and I hope that in your small groups tonight you do, look carefully at that list. There's one thing that should become apparent about all of those things. Love is not a magical or whimsical feeling that just exists that some fairy bestows on you. Love is not something that comes and goes when the mood is right or the season is good or only when the Bruins win. Love is, and if you learn nothing else from this sermon tonight, this is what I hope you take away. In fact, you should write it down. I love it. Some people have pens. If you've learned nothing else, write these four words down. It's worth remembering. Love is a choice. You are not required to choose love. Every day when you wake up, every interaction that you have, every person you come across, you do not have to love them. We are free agents in this world. It's one of the great gifts that we've been given to do whatever we want in this world, on this earth, with this body. So with that freedom comes the freedom to not choose love. Love, things can happen all around you, and you can either engage or not engage. You do not have to participate. I think if you look around in your relationships today, and if you look around in the way that you engage the world, or even if I make it a little less extreme tonight and you just say, let's look at other people, let's look at what they do in the world, you're going to see pretty clearly that there is not a social agreement that we are all going to choose love regularly. You don't see it. The list in 1 Corinthians 13, 4 through 7, we don't, it's hard to understand what those mean because we don't see them every day. We don't see that kind of love on a day-to-day basis in our relationships and the relationships that we see. So I want to, before I get to my last point tonight and share with you, I want to just talk about a couple of the things on this list, on the 1 Corinthians 13, 4 through 7. So first thing, love is not self-seeking. I think this is countercultural. It's not about you. It's about God. It's about the other person, which means it's about God. Here are some things you hear a lot. I wish I could help, but I don't have time. I don't have anything to give. I don't even really know that person. That person is a jerk to me. What have they ever done? Why should I? I wouldn't even know how to help. All that misses it. That's about me. That's self-seeking. I'm going to participate if I get something out of it. Real love is trusting that our God Almighty, all-powerful, is capable of doing what needs to be done if we just merely show up. If we approach the situation saying, I might not know what to do, but it's not about me. Here I am, Lord. You do it. And he will. That's real love. And the idea of that is because that when we merely show up and we let God do it, it's for the benefit of the other person, not us. And the big social contract, the big whole part of this, right, if we are still worried about us, is that if we all commit to do that for everybody else, that other person and everybody else will commit to do it for me, and we'll all lift up, right? But we get stuck on this, it's all about me. What are the things that make it about me? But it's not about you. It's not about me. You got to get out of the way. Let God do it. The second thing is love does not dishonor others. This is a big one in our society, and it's so hard because we want to fit in. But we cut each other down for fun. Careless jokes about women in their roles, about their bodies, lust, unfaithfulness, all these things are not really that funny and bring no honor to the women that we know or ourselves, the men. Jokes about men being stunted emotionally, laziness, stubbornness, this does not honor the people that we know. But we do it. Certainly, if you watch any TV or movies, that's all you see. The next thing is love always hopes. It always perseveres. And this one's hard because it says always, which means not sometimes. No matter what the setback, no matter what the obstacle, real love continues. Real love keeps on. And more than that is it hopes for a time when that type of love brings freedom and joy and peace and connectedness and God. I think the white space in those verses refers to a word we all hate, the F word, forgiveness. We will be transgressed against. I mean, I transgressed against you at the beginning. I made you trust me in this great story that I was going to tell you, and I ripped you down. I betrayed you. You're going to be let down by people. It is going to happen, especially people that you're close to. But to forgive, to still love, and to hope for a time when God is glorified through that love is real. And that's what you need to strive for. How do you do that? Well, we have an excellent counselor on staff here, and I suggest everybody has a mental health counselor or person that can help you work through what it means to always love the people that you know. Because that is hard, and I don't have the answers. The important thing to remember about all of this is that this list, this definition that just sits there in the scriptures for us to look at and say, this is what love is, are based on the standards that God has for us, not the standards that the world has for us. And those are the ones that we need to be setting our sights on. We have to read those and say, okay, well, what do those mean? Then we have to look at the rest of the scriptures and say, tell me through these stories how I can learn what love is, and then help me understand how I in my life can apply it and build up my relationships for their benefit so that God can be glorified. That is the challenge that we have when it comes to love. And I hope that you all feel as passionately as I do, and I think as Jesus does, that it's really the thing that you should set your sights on. Everything else flows from it, right? So I don't know if you remember that Ariana Grande song I brought up just tonight called Love is Everything that I'd never heard of until just now. Well, I looked at the lyrics of that song, and horrible, not right, misses it. Not correct. One of the opening phrases says, as a matter of fact, it won't cost you nothing, which actually I guess is right because of the double negative. But beside that, I think her point is that it's free. You can just love. That's all you have to do is just love. And it's free. It doesn't cost you anything. And that is dead wrong. We have to dispel this notion that love and giving love, that it somehow is a free act that we can do is wrong. To love the way that Jesus commands, to love the way that God has been describing to us through these verses in 1 Corinthians and the rest of the scriptures, requires us to do something that almost nobody in this room, which is saying something because you guys are ahead of the game from the people that are just sitting on their couch, that almost none of us are willing to do. And that is to be vulnerable. And this is my main point tonight, that the gap between saying yes, I want to love, and here's the way to do it. The gap there is vulnerability. And the real truth is that that is where most of us get hung up. Since we were born, we've been developing coping skills or defense mechanisms to protect ourselves from the horrible feelings of our vulnerable nature, right? When our heart is out there and it gets stepped on, we never want to feel that again. So we block. We say, oh, red flag, I see that, I'm out. I'm not participating. I don't want my heart broken. I don't want to be rejected. I don't want to be a part of any of those negative feelings at all. So thank you, but goodbye. That is what we do. We block off shame, grief, loneliness, heartbreak. But the problem with building up the walls to keep those things out is that we inherently block in the good emotions, the love, and the joy, and the empathy, and the belonging, which is where this love that Jesus talks about all the time, it's where that lives. We block it in, and we don't let it out, because we're afraid of the bad. And make no mistake, I am not telling you that if you will be vulnerable, you will not feel shame or guilt or emptiness. In fact, I'm telling you, you will feel those things. But the point I want to make to you tonight is that it's worth the risk. It's a huge cost. But the benefit is, it can't even be measured. There's a woman, Brené Brown. Perhaps some of you have heard her name. She speaks to this. She basically researched this whole phenomenon about shame and vulnerability and courage and living in this place of freedom from fear, of rejection, of, you know, discouragement. It's so excellent. In fact, there's a Netflix special with her that speaks about this. I watch it. It's unbelievable. She's written a lot of books. It's fabulous. But she defines vulnerability in this way, and it's so good. Vulnerability is risk, uncertainty, and emotional exposure. And that's perfect. There's no guarantee. You don't have control of the outcome. You open yourself up, and you might get let down. And it might be real hard. But until you do that, you can't experience the other stuff. Vulnerability is the birthplace of love. Write that down. It's true. That's not mine. That's Brené. Brené Brown. It's good. Vulnerability is the birthplace of love. As, like I said, it's the gap between saying, yeah, that love is a good idea, I think, and here's what it takes. That's the gap. It's the birthplace of love. It's hard, as I said, to be vulnerable. It's hard to open yourself up to that, to people that you don't really know. One of the examples that Ms. Brené Brown uses is to say, I love you first. A really good example. And it doesn't have to be husband and wife or boyfriend and girlfriend, right? Anybody. Men in my men's group. What kind of message is it if I say to Barnabas, I love you? Without him having any expectation or understanding about that was coming at him in that moment. He might say, you're a freak, I don't want to talk to you, goodbye. And then I'm rejected, standing there, you know, with 12 other people I got to now tell I love you too because I got rejected. But this is the idea, that you step out in faith with the risk, the emotional insecurity that things could go badly for the benefit of God's creation coming to you. So I want to finish tonight with another story about this real love. And I swear to you, it doesn't have a twist end. I made that point just to show you that you can be totally let down. If you let yourself, some of you, the one that trusted me, that thought this was a great story, who was let down at the end, it can happen. And you don't know what's going to happen when I tell you this, what I'm about to tell you. It may be another joke. But open yourselves up to it, and I want to share. So some of you know, some of you in this room know, because I've been vulnerable with you, and it's more than you would think. For those of you that don't know me, there are a number of people in here that know this story about my life and my wife's life. our road to parenthood has been paved with anxiety, loss, and grief. We suffered as many as 5 official miscarriages along the way. Some of you know my daughter is 4, Eloise. She was actually a twin. And we knew that for about 2 months before the other twin died. And they told us that that happens. And we just can take pictures a lot earlier now than we could 50 years ago, so people just didn't know about it before. Like as if that somehow was helpful to my heart. The scientific answer didn't provide any relief in that moment. Our very first miscarriage before Eloise was bad because it was at like 12 weeks. We had seen a heartbeat, seen pictures, and got excited about a life. You know, we were crushed. One of the worst things that you can do, and I did it, is announce before it happens. Because then you have to unannounce. And that is horrible. Sarah, we decided not to do a DNC and just have the miscarriage at home. And so she was, her body was starting that process. She didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't know. I was just watching it. And yet I had to be the one that got on the phone and texted everybody, be like, hey, I hope you didn't send us any gifts yet because it's not happening. We told them because we wanted to be excited. We opened ourselves up to it, but at the cost of that devastating feeling that I'd never wanted to feel again. When we tried again and we got pregnant again, that was a real issue. Do I tell people? I don't want to tell people. That was horrible, that feeling. But then I'm sitting there in my joy, can't get out. I mean, I think I'm going to be a parent this time, but maybe not. That tension is extreme. All of that led to about 2 years ago. We'd had 4 miscarriages, 5 miscarriages, as I said. And Sarah had all but given up hope. And we were here on a Sunday morning, facing that way, before we pivoted the church. And in one of the songs, God poked me, and he called me to faith and obedience. And he said, look, I know that you have experienced loss, and your babies are okay, right? Like, I am good. And if you want another child, and I have that for you, you just got to ask for it. You just got to pray. So now, despite having told a lot of people in my community who had prayed for me a lot of times, now I was asking them to join me in this thing that I didn't know was real or not real. I had to have faith, right? It's uncertainty, this risk, it's emotional exposure that I offered to people to join me in. My wife, who was devastated, not wanting to do it, saying, all right, I guess I trust you. I guess I trust God. I don't trust you. This is smart. But we had to be vulnerable to get to that place. And the end of the story is happy because 6 months ago, we had a little boy. And he's doing really good. But the point... the point of that story is not the last 6 months. The point of that story is from the 2 years ago to the 6 months ago. In there, where the risk and uncertainty live, where I had to rely on these people to get me through, to carry me. To be vulnerable means you have to give your whole heart, not part of it, not some guarded bit. You have to give your whole heart. And when you give your whole heart, the other people that have been given it, you have somebody's whole heart. And you have to steward that. What a blessing, right? That is the kind of relationships that we should be forming and bonding in this place that is the safest place to do that. I was writing this afternoon and I was crying, thinking about the relationships that I'm talking about here. The depth of love and support, you know, because no, we're not good. We're not always right. We come and say, oh, that sucks. And you say the wrong thing and now you've made somebody cry. Right? Whoops. we're not perfect at holding somebody's whole heart in our hands, but that's what we got to do. And we learn and we grow, but we support each other. And you hold mine, and I'll hold yours, and we'll do our best, and we'll rely on God the whole way. Like I said, you will get hurt, but the real love is there. The real love that God talks about, the relationships that he talks about. When he talks about community, he's not talking about this thing where we get together and play spike ball, although it'll be awesome. That's not what he's talking about. What he's talking about is giving your whole self to somebody else and letting them care for you, and you taking their whole heart and caring for them, because it's all about them. It's all about God. I hope that you are all challenged tonight to think about ways that you can be vulnerable with people in your small groups. And if you can't, that's okay. But to challenge yourself to be vulnerable with somebody. And there's no guarantees. But do it.